Welcome to the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University. Welcome to this special podcast on the National Rehabilitation Centre. This podcast looks into the development of this new exciting facility, its unique place in the world of rehabilitation, and the benefits that it would deliver to patients, research, healthcare professionals and the community. Today, I'm joined by Professor Mark Lewis, Dean of the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University, Professor Pip Logan, Director of Research and Knowledge Exchange at the University of Nottingham, and Miriam Duffy, Chief Allied Health Professional at Nottingham University Hospitals and the Programme Director for the NRC.
Hi everyone, nice to have you on this special podcast. So I know it's a really exciting time to be talking about the National Rehabilitation Centre, or NRC as it's often referred to. Today we're going to focus on the development of the NRC, its unique place in the world of rehab, and the benefits it will deliver to patients, research, healthcare professionals, and the community. So let's get straight in there. So Mark, what is the NRC and how did the idea for the NRC first develop?
Yeah, thanks, Martin. So the NRC really came out, ironically, considering what it's trying to achieve, from British operations in Afghanistan, Operation Heroic. As you'll be aware, that was British operations from 2002 to 2014, I think, roughly in that period. And in that time, it's always astounding in the saddest way, the human beings' ability to injure each other in more and more exotic and weird ways. And one of the biggest things during that conflict, which changed during the course of it, was one, the survival rate. So injuries which would have killed people on the battlefield, even 10-year period, weren't. But people were coming back with much more complicated injuries, and therefore they required much more complicated rehabilitation. In the military, there's a part of the military called Defence Medical Services that's across all of the disciplines. So that's the Navy, the Air Force, the Army. And the individuals will be, and then I think they also pioneered actually sort of field hospital, as you might want to call it, operations for people to then be transported to University Hospital of Birmingham, which is the chronic rehabilitation centre, the acute rehabilitation centre. And then moved to the Defence Medical Rehabilitation Centre, the DMRC. This was in a place called Headley Court in Surrey. And in and around 2009, Duke of Westminster, who his involvement, it's the next Duke of Westminster, that was the sixth Duke of Westminster, his son is now Duke of Westminster, the seventh, who was a senior reserve appointment in the Ministry of Defence, was very connected with DMRC and Headley Court, and he would visit regularly. Now, at that time, it was inundated, probably bursting at the seams, with people coming back from that conflict who needed complex rehabilitation moving forward. And he said he wanted to do something significant to help those who'd served on behalf of the nation who'd become seriously injured. There was a lot of conversation at the time about the fact, you know, it was an old country house, basically, which had been sort of repurposed. I think it was repurposed from the Second World War, actually. I can't remember exactly. And it has a hodgepodge of buildings. And he said that, you know, we need something bigger and better. We want to really recognise these people. The then Defence Secretary also supported the Duke and said we should do it. And by the way, we should do something for the nation too. What does that mean? Well, in a lot of the thing about sport and the military is they're early adopters. They'll do things. Pip will tell you, because she's a clinician, that it takes the NHS a very long time through the NHS ethics process and all of those processes to be able to do things. Things happen much more quickly because of they need to happen quickly, but the sport and military. And so you often see a lot of the advances in, say, historically in plastic surgery or whatever would have come from what happens in conflict, then translated to the more general population. So there was also an idea that something should be done for the nation as well. So Defence and National Rehabilitation Centre plan was developed by the Duke of Westminster. The Duke of Westminster is basically Grosvenor Estates. And if you look up Grosvenor Square and places like that in London, and large land ownership, what the Duke did was, with the then Defence Secretary, is to put together this plan for the Defence and National Rehabilitation Centre, the D, it's alphabetic spaghetti, I'm afraid, Martin, the DNRC, which would be composed of a relocated DMRC, from Headley Court, and an NRC. So was put before Parliament, I think in 2009, and it was all agreed, this is a really good idea. Why don't you get on with it? So what the Duke did was to get on with the DMRC part. Because there were two things which need to happen. One, the MOD would need to agree to relocate the services from Headley Court to Stamford, to the new location. It happens to be Stamford Hall. I've dropped ahead of myself there, to the new location. And secondly, the Department of Health would agree to fund an NRC. So the programme was developed, put together. So we have a DNRC programme lead, who's Tim Gravel Chapman, who leads the DNRC programme, the broader programme. There's a DMRC and an NRC part. The DMRC is a £350 million refurbishment of a country house and park very near to Loughborough University, 4 miles away, called Stamford Hall. That was identified because they wanted a place which was less than an hour by road from Birmingham, and which was in the centre of the UK, and which also fitted the bill in terms of the look and the feel, and certainly the larger state, this idea of having lots of outdoor space as well for rehab. Again, just to add to the complexity here, the Duke of Westminster and Grosvenor Estates wouldn't be able to do that in their own name. So there was a charity created called the Black Stork Charity. So the Black Stork Charity raised £350 million through donations, £200 million, I understand, from six people. It's quite staggering when you think about it, to have the finance and identify somewhere to locate the DMRC. That programme continued. It was built. The landlords, the Blackstock Charity, gave permission for the building to happen. And the DMRC, the Defence Medical Rehabilitation Centre, transferred its services from Headley Court to Stamford Court at Stamford Hall and opened in autumn 2018. So the defence part has been running for quite some time. On the back of that, this was, I can't remember exactly the year it was, but on the back of that, a certain point in that process, the Department of Health then said, we are committed to an NRC. And I won't go into this podcast all the governance and all the things that have happened about where it's ended up, because it's been part of this programme, it's part of that programme. It's now considered one of the flagships of the new hospitals programme, which is a big, this government flagship around refurbishing estate, etc. Good in some ways, because it's linked it into an NHS, into a big programme. In some ways, though, it's made our job a little bit harder, because actually, when something has the NHS associated with it, there are certain expectations around it. And Pip will probably go into it when she speaks. But we wanted the NRC to be different from existing setups and the way that things work. So we're currently 18 months or so away from the NRC being built. Plans are that it still will be built by next autumn, between late autumn, early winter next year. And on the back of that, we have been for the last, I don't know how long it's been, Pip, 5 or 6 years. Can't remember how long it's been, that we've been working as the leads of the consortium, the academic consortium. There was a national bidding process to be the academic leads for the NRC, led by the board of the Defence and National Rehabilitation Centre programme, the broader programme. We won, and we were asked to do it together, exactly as we planned. Not Pip and I, to do it together, but the two organisations, because through things like Midlands Innovation, which you might have heard of, the cluster of institutions in and around where we are, we'd kind of already been doing a lot of work in the background about staying up, because it's a huge asset for the region. It'll be a £500 million project in the end, £500 million project. It will be unique because there won't be another NRC and there won't be another DMRC. It will bring huge opportunities both locally. I hate using the word locally, it sounds parochial, because this is an international program, that's what it's supposed to be about. And we're waiting for, we've been working together, the organisations, for quite some time now to do things like writing research bids. And we've been pretty successful, actually, on the back of that, on the back of the NRC, putting together a broader consortium. So the heart of it is Loughborough and Nottingham, universities and Nottingham University's hospital. We're very keen to emphasise they were asked to host it on behalf of the nation. We keep coming to that. This is the national centre, and we're doing it on behalf of. So although we are key players, because it was recognised, unless it had good local buy-in, it wasn't going to work. So that was really important. And so we've been very well supported by the universities of Derby, Leicester, Birmingham and Nottingham Trent. There are 20 plus other universities around the UK who have also been helping us and contributing to what goes on. The MOD is obviously involved in the NRC, because the other thing was about crossing over of expertise and being, and that to happen. And yeah, we've been working really hard on the R&I side. That can kind of happen without a premises almost, because we can, one of the things that in terms of the NRC build, which we've been fully part of the design of the building, what it, you know, what will happen in it. We didn't want to recreate things which happened in our organizations already. So some of that stuff under the NRC ban has already started. There will be things which are unique in the NRC, of course. And then following up, we've also started thinking about our education and student experience, and certainly in my in Loughborough, and I know people talk about Nottingham, we've got three programs which have now been sort of on the books to start being delivered by next year. So I hope that helps, but that kind of gives you a bit of a sense of where we are, and we've been trying to sort of raise the flag and shout about this for a long time because of the process in government to release the money, called a Green Book process. There are points you're not allowed to say anything, because of public consultations and public inquiries and sort of things, you're not allowed to say anything. So, you know, it's like been the worst kept secret in the world at one point. So that's why we're really pleased that we've got the opportunity at the Royal Society summer exhibitions, which are in July, to be able to talk more and more about it and talk about our partnership particularly.
It's really interesting because obviously, you know, I'm around this, and the history you've just given me there is really interesting, the development of it and how it came about. Yeah. So, you know, thank you for that. And obviously you've touched upon the academic consortiums and being led by Loughborough and Nottingham with many other partners involved. So Pip, if I want to bring you in now, so how is this collaborative approach benefiting everybody? Like, where is this going? What's the benefits of it in research, innovation? Maybe it's enterprise technology. What is it, and what are the benefits to everybody?
Yeah, thank you, Martin. And thanks, Mark, for that great introduction. It is a really good collaborative event. It's a really good collaborative programme that we've got going on. And what's actually happened, even though the building's not going to be completed till November 2024, is that we've started on really big research and innovation projects leading to impact on real patients across the UK and globally as well. So our research portfolios in R&I have been led by winning grants across the three organisations with partners outside of those three partnerships. For example, doing things on rehab technology. So looking at how technology can help people have more rehabilitation, they can have better rehabilitation, they can live independent lives, they can get back to work, they can get back to their hobbies. Rehabilitation sometimes was seen as a Cinderella profession in research and in clinical work. And I think now having the NRC has really elevated that, and we can see the benefits for patients and for people through their physical and their mental health. So that integration is essential, and having the NRC building will allow us to have rehabilitation research and innovation in every aspect of it. So we will have research in the bedrooms, it'll be on the corridors, it'll be out in the greenfield site of the building, but it'll also be in the gym and in the spaces that we've got. So we see real rehabilitation as not just that traditional look, that, you know, older people with a walking frame. This is for rehabilitation for all age groups. So, and really building on a lot of the work that we've been seeing in the military, which, you know, people saw at the 2012 Olympics. They saw people running on blades. They saw people using fantastic wheelchairs, leading completely independent lives after quite severe injury. And that's what we're hoping and aiming for the rest of, you know, the population of the UK to have that opportunity, which maybe they've not been able to have in the past or in the last few years. So we've won a lot of grants. We've been particularly supported by the EPSRC, the NIHR, the MRC in winning these grants. And that's really shown that the name of the NRC is getting out there. The National Rehab Centre is becoming really internationally well known. We've been asked to go and give talks around the world, and we've been to visit other rehab centres around the globe. I was out in Australia. Mark's been to visit other places. And really sort of spreading the word that we're a collaborative a group of people to build that research and knowledge. In that world, we've also built a really good patient and public involvement group where we have people meeting every month to discuss research and to discuss innovation. People have had lived experience, so they may be out of the NHS or, you know, they've passed through one of our rehab centres in the UK, and we're bringing them back to help us with our new grants and our new innovations. So, you know, helping us work out what the next set of blades would be like, what the next set of prostheses would need to be, how what equipment people might need in their own homes so they can live independently. So it's really a collaborative approach. And as Mark says, working across all those other 22 universities that we've been really coming to our meetings and engaging with us. We've built a really good portfolio of education and training between the two universities and Nottingham University Hospitals Trust. And we're aiming to be developing training for all levels of rehabilitation. So some will be postgraduate, some will be PhD level, and we've already got PhDs started. They're in the, just will be going into their third year in September on topics wide ranging, mental rehabilitation, rehabilitation for spinal cord injury, rehabilitation on insoles, on muscle development, on, you know, growing new muscles in laboratories for people with rehab things. So the portfolio is broad. It's quite vast when you start looking at rehab in that bigger picture. And then our training courses are reflective of that. So we are developing, as Nottingham University's got four new master's courses, Loughborough University with Mark's got three new master's courses, but also we've developed continuing professional development courses, so shorter master class courses. We've been running them at the moment on one day courses, but we hopefully that they'll be longer. And that's attracting international interest in really new and innovative topics. So looking at cognitive rehabilitation and respiratory rehabilitation, which maybe have come out of the pandemic, people suffering more with long-term cognitive problems or long-term respiratory problems. So looking at society, looking at the people, what we've got in society, and look at, and really making it fit to society's needs. The other bit we're really keen on working with is industry, and we've put in a few bids with industrial partners, and we're writing one at the moment with industrial partners, and I think that's really crucial for us to be able to span across not just the NHS, but our other partners, and making sure that they are in at the very beginning of our grant thought processes and really adding depth and knowledge to the research and the education side. So for the, you know, in the education, obviously there's rehab medics, so there's medicine students, there's nursing students, physiotherapy students, occupational therapy students, speech and language therapy students will all benefit from the building. They will all be people going into the building, doing their research, doing their teaching inside the building, working alongside their NHS colleagues. And that integration of working together to the public might sound perfectly normal, but actually it's quite new and quite innovative. It's quite a new way of having the mixture of students from universities and the public in working together. So there's that, but also there's the engineers who will be in the building, and the physiologists. We've got a clinical research facility inside the building, so we'll be able to do trials on drugs maybe, and consideration of imaging ideas. So really sort of broadening that spectrum of how the public see rehabilitation.
You've just hit the nail on the head with that last comment about how the public see things, because through what you've been saying, I've just been thinking, wow, that the depth of what is going to be going on here is massive. And these podcasts are all about bridging the gap between academia and professional practice. And those listeners that might be listening, and, you know, sometimes the perception of research is, oh, you know, research is just for research's sake and things like that, that we've all heard before. It's certainly not the case here. And it's certainly not the case with these two institutions that are coming together. And this kind of outcome, you know, sounds amazing. The key things there around research and education and industry coming together as collaborative partners is absolutely brilliant. And I know earlier you mentioned, obviously, Nottingham and your Loughborough are leading on this. There's many other partners. What is it specifically that Nottingham and Loughborough are bringing to the table in terms of their knowledge and contribution, and how is that, how is each party benefiting from that?
So obviously the two universities worked really closely before the NRC came along, so, you know, big areas in sports exercise from Loughborough University, a lot of physiology from Mark's own work, and muscle growing, and, you know, cellular level research, which obviously cuts across both universities. The University of Nottingham also had a 30-year investment in rehabilitation research, and I'm an occupational therapist. I've come through that programme. So Mark's a physiologist, so the two of us combined bring quite a lot of breadth to that programme. But obviously the University of Nottingham does a lot of research in applied health research, social care research, applied health research, so actually how it impacts on people, how people do exercise, how they maintain their health in the community, how they manage to live with multiple sclerosis, having had a stroke, maybe how they live with, they've had an amputation or a head injury. I'll let Mark answer a little bit more about Loughborough University, but I think they complement each other, and we've been able to find that we're doing joint supervision for PhD students, and we're able to have the sort of medical and patient side of it coming from, I think, from Miriam will tell us more about this, but it's actually been really good because it's brought real life issues that the patients and the NHS have brought to the universities and said, oh, we really need to sort out this. We really need a bit of kit which is going to be like a portable blood pressure monitor or something, or we really need some sort of new gadget that's going to help people be much more motivated to do their exercise, and therefore we start to be able to work on those projects. It doesn't stop us doing the blue sky thinking research. Obviously universities do loads of blue sky thinking, but I think having that real, you know, sort of society's need is also where we want to be. We want to help people get back to independent living and get back to their jobs and get back to their families and communities, and, you know, be able to do that without having to rely on other people to help them live their lives. So I'll let Mark talk a little bit more about what Loughborough's got, that's a slightly different angle, because we are different universities. So.
Yeah, so rather than talk about specifics, I think Pip's covered it really nicely. I think one thing I want to reiterate, and just hearing you two talk to each other over that last sort of 10 minutes has made me remind me that we want it to be for everyone. And I think sometimes the association with health or medicine or engineering or biosciences or NRC or NHS isn't always helpful. Everybody in their life has a major life event which they need to recover from. Everybody in their life, no matter how big or small it is. And so that's when you talked about how big and broad it was. That's exactly what we want it to be. We want everyone to feel they can be part of it. Whereas, you know, all the doors are open rather than the doors are all closed. And that includes everything, also sort of a pre-habilitation as well, prevention, if you will, in different language. And I think Pip summed it up really nicely in terms of, you know, this isn't just allied health professionals and medicine. This is a completely range of everybody you could possibly imagine. We've mentioned scientists and engineers, and includes social science as well as humanities. As broad as possible, in the broadest possible sense. So why is it important to Loughborough? Well, because it's the opportunity for us to be involved in a world-leading activity. And there aren't many of those that organisations get the chance to be involved in, and this is one of them. But really nicely discussed how it brings lots of different things together, which seem disparate. And sometimes, Mike, we have had that. People saying, well, you know, why is this? In fact, just very recently, even sometimes amongst our own group of people saying, well, why is that with that? And we say, and we quite well trained in the mantra now, going back to say, no, it's really, really broad. That's how it's going to work. Because you don't know what the prevention or the rehabilitation thing is for an individual who has this sort of life event or that life event. It's very, very broad. And it's going to take a whole range of technologies and disciplines and interventions to be able to make that happen. The other thing which is really exciting about it, in terms of, I think, the world leading activity, the national leading activity, and I think you both touched on it yourself and Pip in your conversation a little bit earlier, is the opportunity this gives us to change not just practice, but also to drive economic benefits, if you like. The region we're in is part of something called the Midlands Engine for Growth, which goes along the Northern Powerhouse and, you know, the Golden Triangle, all these vernacular that people use about the levelling up agenda. That's really, really, really important. One of the things we tried to do, and Pip's already touched on it, is by this world-leading activity, and Pip's already said, we've been around the world, Miriam's done the same, we've been lots of places. We know that we have the potential, but, well, I believe we're world-leading already by even talking like we are, but to actually deliver on that, I think it's really important. So it's been picked up very well. We've been supported pretty well by, again, local government sounds very colloquial. It's a bit more than just local government, by government. Around opportunity zones, for example, there are a number of science and enterprise parks in and around all of our regions, where we're talking about rehab zones, for want of a better description, where incoming investment from international countries will come to and want to set up in and around where we are, you know, we believe that there's near expertise in other Nottingham universities, and they've worked together historically for a long time and will continue to do so in a number of different areas. Make it very attractive to organisations, the NRC, the DMRC, and we're involved in something called the National Centre of Sport and Exercise Medicine together, ourselves, Nottingham and NUH, the FA Centre at Burton. There's so many things in that infrastructure, which mean it should be the place that the world wants to come and play in this space. So if you ask me what it brings to Loughborough, I think that's what it brings. I think it brings the opportunity to work with brilliant partners on something which really matters to change the world. There you go. Minor
ambition. I like it. I did some work a little bit on innovation ecosystems, and it sounds like a very good innovation ecosystem is developed. Well, it's already there and is developing further. So at that point, we will bring Miriam in. So Miriam, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Hello.
Hello. We've been talking about the benefits, the collaboration, the history of the NRC, and obviously touched upon the kind of academic research and industrial partners. But it'd be good to hear from yourself around the clinical benefits that this will bring to the healthcare professionals, patients and the local community. So could you give us some insights into that, please?
Absolutely. So as Mark and Pip have both described, this is an acutely important programme of work, which has been going on for some time, but will also continue for some time to come as we open the centre and beyond. Rehab is a specialty in the health service and in the medical arena, which has been underinvested in for a very long period of time, and it's poorly understood, particularly around the impact that it has and the cost effectiveness of the interventions. So to give you some context around that, we in the health service align our acute services very well in terms of regional services. So we have real centres of excellence, such as Nottingham being one, around major trauma, neurosciences and other complex orthopaedic issues. So we concentrate expertise in one place. When we set up the major trauma system in 2012, our target was to save 20% more lives than previously, and we've achieved that. Unfortunately, those people are seriously injured and require a degree and in some cases extensive period of time in rehabilitation to regain their former activity, both in terms of social, psychological, as well as physical health, to then participate as much as they can back into society and ultimately hopefully work. So 40% of major trauma patients require this specialist inpatient period of rehabilitation, but only 40% of that, 40% have access at the moment because the deficit is so large. And we know that it works. So over that person's lifetime, if they do access rehabilitation, we save over £500,000 in not needed ongoing health and social care costs. So economically, whichever way you look at this, it makes perfect sense. But more in terms of the impact on the individual, we have a duty of care, don't we? If we're going to save somebody's life, then to help them make the most of that opportunity. So as Mark said, many, many people will come across periods of their life where they are in difficulty because of injury or illness. And it is our duty to be able to enable them to get back to that social and work activity. So learning from best practice around the world, and we've done extensive research on this, as you might imagine. What we found was our access into rehabilitation services in the UK is really narrow. So it really depends on the type of injury you have. And for people with neurological issues, we cater relatively well for. But for somebody with general deconditioning after a period of time in hospital following extensive surgery, for example, or complex orthopaedic type injuries, we don't cater well for at all. So a lot of our learning has been in that front end, Martin, in terms of how people access rehab services and who can access rehab service. So we've really opened the lid on that and taken it as broad as we possibly can. Looking then closer back to home in terms of how our defence medical services practice and the military offer, and the intensity around that has made us think very, very differently about what we can deliver as well. So bringing all of those disciplines together, as Mark and Pip have described, not just clinical, but people with technological and engineering and other expertise to really enhance that person's day so that they are active and promoting their recovery in all sorts of different ways to how we currently deliver that. So that we're really transforming outcomes. So one of the measures we will use is how many people return to work. And at the moment, after a major trauma injury, at 6 months, only 35% of our population is returned to some form of employment. And across Europe and the States, that figure is between 50 and 60%. And of course, in the military, that's much higher again. So whichever way you look at this, again, the delta is quite large. That's not to say we don't have the expertise, because we absolutely do. The investment just hasn't been there.
It's a really good insight. And again, you've just really added to what's been said already by Pip and Mark in that clinical space and around the impact of what this work is going to have for people. So what kind of facilities are there at the NRC that are going to enhance this impact? Like, what does it paint the picture? What does it look like in this facility, and how does it all come together?
So building a building is really exciting, right? So we've started from scratch on this, and as I said before, looked at centres around the world which do this really well. And we've taken different ideas from those centres and put them together in the NRC. And we're also lucky enough to be on the Stanford Hall Rehab Estate, which has fantastic facilities in its own right, both outside and inside. So we have sharing opportunities with the Defence Centre around some of the very high tech equipment that they already have. So we haven't been duplicative, been very careful not to do that. And in making the most of the public money that's been put into this, we've been careful to create space which is state of the art, facilitates innovation and thinking broadly, which isn't designated into different areas. So all the space is collaborative, and that's a really key part of the NRC. So everybody who comes through the building will be consented to participate in a research trial, and that will be an expectation of all of our patients, but also beyond NRC. But the researchers, the academics, the teachers and trainers and the clinicians will all be working together in that same space. So to translate that learning into clinical practice as quickly as possible. So yes, of course, we have gyms and we have lots of clinic rooms for one-to-one sessions. We have big wide open spaces where we are enabling people to transport themselves around as much as possible. So we've tried to take away the barriers to people being independent in that building so that we're facilitating their independence right from day one. And part of that is space, part of that is technological, and part of that is the attitude and the culture that we're building around that centre for people to do that right from the start. So, for example, if you're day one or two into your admission, you might still be pretty acutely unwell, and the day might look very different if you're just about to leave home. So, but a rehab activity would still be counted as not having somebody wash and dress you, doing that as much as you can for yourself, even the fact that that takes 2 or 3 hours, it doesn't matter. So the whole point is that we turn this on its head and enable that independence. So big wide open spaces, lots of glass, very light and airy. It doesn't feel like a hospital because it isn't a hospital, and that's really important. And again, access easily to outside space. So if you can't physically access the outside, there are very easy ways that you can see the outside. So all the patient rooms are facing down across the estate with fantastic views, for example. But equally, in between the five pavilions, there are different garden areas for different activities, and it's easily accessible. So we're hoping that people really, in the nice weather like we've got at the moment, will spend as much time outside as well as inside in their rehab journey.
The main thing I've just taken from that, and obviously listeners, you can't see people's faces, we're on Microsoft Teams, we can look at each other, is you talked about a few things there. You described the building, but the smile on all three of your faces on this and the nodding that's happening. And you talked about culture, and this culture of bringing kind of academics together and research together and practitioners and patients is brilliant. But how excited and passionate you all look about this is my main take home. So I'm just trying to get that across to the listeners. This is something that you guys have worked on hugely, and you clearly cannot wait for this to open and for the impact it's going to have.
Just think you've hit nail on the head there, Martin. I think culture is a really important thing. I don't really want this to be, you know, I've made this point, and I've got to be careful about how I say it. But this isn't about illness and injury. This is about living. This is about rejuvenation, regeneration. And that's why it isn't just a medical school involved. It's all of other bits of Nottingham University. It's our university, because it's about living your life the best you can live. And I think Miriam hit the nail on the head when she said military and sport actually set a very high standard. You know, if somebody's rehabbed in those organizations, they're going back to do their job at the highest level. They're not just going back to be able to walk out of the room. And I think Miriam's absolutely right. That's what's been really nice about the organisations on the academic side. Lupper, obviously, a great reputation in and around sport area, not a very good reputation in and around that area as well. The military, again, because it sets the standard much higher. And it says, yes, we can have that standard. Now, we might need technological advances. We might need to think about things differently to do it. You know, Miriam talked about some areas which are sport. So cardiac rehab is a really good example. There's one physiological metabolic condition where you get rehab, but not others. It's all really piecemeal, like Miriam's talked about, and some things are supported and some things not. It's not just going to be ill and injured people in the building. We will be having healthy volunteers. We will be having people coming in to do the sort of things you might imagine. So I just don't want, I don't believe we've said it, but I want to really reiterate, and I think you've said it already, Martin. It's for everybody, no matter where you are. And of course, the more we can prevent, the better, right? Because that means that a lot of the other stuff is then not needed at all. And that's where we want to. So it really is about, it's about people and about lives. It's not about illness and decrepitude and, you know, people being stuck in a corner. And I think that's what's really most exciting about it, because it's everyone.
I just wanted to add a little bit about the facilities, because Miriam's done a really good overview. But also, I think we've definitely got in the building some areas where people can stay with their families. So they'll be able to stay in flats. There'll be small apartments inside the building, but actually try out living independently inside. And you know, I'm quite an old occupational therapist. We used to do that quite a lot, but that's disappeared. And I think that's really innovative. So people, you know, if they've had a major trauma and then they're in this building, that it's very fearful for them to go home, but they're going to be able to try out living in those flats inside the building and have family members come and join them there. And then also be able to, for them to take part in the research and the teaching as well alongside it. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that it was about that whole life of, as Mark said, getting back to work, working with social services, working with healthcare providers from other areas, and then keeping in touch with the patients after they've left the building, so that we're not just saying, right, you know, we've discharged you and that's the end of that. This would be a sort of longer process.
Thanks, Pip. And Miriam, did you want to add something?
Yeah, so the other really interesting aspects to this building is that we'll be the first truly carbon net zero NHS building or clinical building that's been built in the country. So there's lots of technology that's gone into that. And this is a technology enabling building, so that in that journey back to work, for example, if people can pick up some of their working life whilst they're still in rehabilitation, then we will absolutely enable them to do that through great Wi-Fi and all the rest of it. So, and that's something that the military do really well, Martin. So whilst people are rehabilitating through the Defence Medical Rehab Centre, they are also doing a job in large part. So whichever aspect of that part of their employment they can continue with, we will also help our patients to do that too. And that's very different to what we do at the moment.
Thanks, Miriam. And thanks all of you. We're currently coming out to run out of time. So I really want to ask you one more thing before we kind of summarise. And that was, if you guys all had a crystal ball and we could sit back down in 10 years time and say, wow, wasn't that amazing? What impact did we have? What would that look like? What impact would this have? And can this have in 10 years time? Pip, would you like to start?
Yeah, so I would like the centre to be one of those places that people are actually actively asking to come to. So for the patients to be, you know, saying as soon as they come into a hospital, an acute hospital, but I want to go to the National Rehab Centre. I want to go there. I want to take part in the research. I also want the students to want to come and be there. I want the people coming to Loughborough and Nottingham universities to say, actually, I'm coming there because I want to be able to go and try out the National Rehab Centre, learn something in there, and the word rehab to be on their mouths, talking about rehab in that broader sense. And then I also want to be able to open up the door to our international colleagues so that we are the place to come to in 10 years' time. People are talking about it all around the world, saying, go to the National Rehab Centre for training in a whole range of activities. So I want it to be internationally known. I want it to be accessible for the people of the UK. And I also want it to be a place that people want to go learning and have their education at. So that would be my aim.
They are some brilliant impacts. Mark, what impacts would you like to see?
Well, I'd be interested to gauge Pip's and Miriam's face when I say this. But in a funny sort of way, I'd almost hope we don't exist in the future, because we've done things, we've enabled technology in such a way that people can access things in an easy way in their own home. We educate and help people around prevention, particularly around sort of cardiometabolic life events and things like that. So we actually don't need to exist in the same way. So for me, that would be the real way forward, is that, you know, people are living healthy, longer lives, and we've enabled that. So Miriam's already touched on the tech, both Miriam and Pip. We want that to be just commonly available, either through industrial partners or however it's delivered. So people look and people and look after themselves. And I think that's what I've learned most from this project, is being able to be having ownership and having agency over your own life and your own activities. That's actually what drives people the most. Like in my, just from working with these brilliant guys and some of the brilliant stuff I've been involved with through this project, that's what drives people the most. So in a funny kind of, I know that sounds like probably not 10 years, it's maybe a lot longer than 10 years away. But that's kind of almost what we want to get to, that, you know, living your life and being able to access things which enable you to do that is just commonplace. And I still think, and Miriam's touching on it, it's just still too difficult at the moment, because maybe some of the tech hasn't been invented yet, and that's what we're going to do. That's one of the things we're going to do. But also, it's almost, again, I'm going to use the word that I've already used, it's cultural. And it's a culture of a population, really, that people want to be engaging with this. So, you know, perhaps not quite your 10-year question, but that's sort of what, you know, fundamentally what I'd like to see the future look like.
Nice, Mark, and interesting. I'm going to throw in that I've just done a podcast with some leaders in the metaverse. Some people from MIT talking about the metaverse. So it could be, we could collaborate these podcasts and have a metaverse that's got this health kind of space going on, and nobody has to leave anywhere. We're all healthy and fit and all the rest of it. So that's brilliant. Miriam, what about yourself? What would success look like?
Well, so I totally agree with Mark, actually. I think 10 years is quite ambitious, but along that journey, in 10 years' time, I absolutely want to see rehabilitation transformed across this country and making it everybody's business, so that people understand what, if they're in that situation, they need, but also how to access it and how to do that in a really timely way so that they can live their best and most productive life.
That's amazing. Look, guys, we've run out of time, really. And I often summarize the podcast, which with the information you've given me is very, very hard to do. This collaborative approach is brilliant. It's so broad, and there's the teaching, the research and the innovation, the enterprise that's involved, the industrial partners. Everybody seems to have a voice and a place at the table here. The main thing I took from some of you, sorry, was that people is central to this, and whoever those people are doesn't matter. Whether it's you as a patient, whether it's you as a doctor, whether it's you as a researcher, whether you're coming to learn, everybody. And you mentioned parents or partners, and that it is people. This is people. There might be technology led, there might be innovative things going on, but at the end of the day, this is about people, and it's about people living their best lives. And I think if people take that away from this, the NRC looks like a really exciting project, and I can't wait to sit down again in 10 years' time and see if everybody's redundant because Mark's vision has become true in 10 years.
Well, sorry, Mark. Find something to do, Martin. We're always finding something to do. I just like your summary there. It's about culture. And the one point I was going to make is that we've said that, you know, you said it's broad, it's multi-dimensional, lots of things. And it's too easy, I think, historically, people say, because it's difficult, we won't do it. Oh, it's hard getting lots of people together. It's hard getting communities communicating with each other. And we all sat there and said, that's nonsense. A little bit ridiculous. And all of us, and not just us, there's a huge team of people involved in this, in all the organisations and outside the organisations, are making this happen or making this happen. It's saying that's not an acceptable answer because it's difficult and people might not get on or whatever. We don't think that's a reason not to do it. It's completely the opposite. So I think you've summed up really nicely. Culture is a really important part.
On that, Martin, just one thing. I don't know if Miriam said it, but I don't know if she, the public will. One of our things was we're not having wards in this building. There's no wards. So we said it's not a hospital, but we're not going to have a ward system, and we're not going to have a physiotherapy department system and an occupational therapy department. And we're not having a door that says University of Nottingham or Loughborough University on it. So, you know, I think that's a very, I think for the public coming into it, that'd be really innovative, new. I mean, to us, it seems like normal now because we've talked about it for 5 years, but actually coming in and sleeping in a bedroom, but not sleeping on a ward, and going down to the gym and not going to the physiotherapy department is quite a nice way of looking at that cohesiveness and that newness and that sort of like we're completely committed to the person as opposed to the names that we've had in the last, you know, in the hospital settings.
I have no authority whatsoever to say this, but really, I really do kind of say thank you to you guys, because like you say, and Mark mentioned there, this is so difficult and people, you know, do take the easy option. And this clearly isn't the easy option. This is person centric. This is how it should be done. And it often isn't how it's done. So, you know, I can only imagine the work that you have all put in the background to make this a reality. So, you know, on behalf of whoever I can speak for, I would say thank you, because this sounds amazing. And hopefully our listeners are really enthused by this, and whatever, you know, people are central to this. So anyone who's listening who might want to be involved, whether it's academics and research and are interested in it, go have a look at the website, go get in touch with me. I can pass people on to other people and those kind of things. And let's hope this really moves forward into something that is innovative and has the massive impact that we all hope for.
Thanks for listening to the Experts in Sport podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, then please contact me, Martin Foster, at m.foster@alborough.ac.uk. Thanks for listening. See you next time.